The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As Russian President Vladimir Putin prepares to meet with Donald Trump tomorrow, he's continuing to expand his friendship with North Korea, just this week reaffirming the relationship with the reclusive nation. But while North Korean soldiers and laborers are sent to Russia, what's in it for North Korea? Well, Robert E. Kelly is professor of political science at the National University in Busan in South Korea, and he's on the line. Robert, good morning and welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, we know what's in it for Vladimir Putin. He gets laborers to replace Russian soldiers who have gone to the front line, perhaps who've perished on the front line. So that's what's in it for Russia. What's in it for North Korea?
Well, for the laborers, they get paid, but the money goes to the regime. It doesn't actually go to the guys themselves doing the logging and the mining and whatnot in Siberia. And so that's nice because North Korea is under sanction and it's run by a sort of gangsterish elite that likes its luxuries. So it needs U.S. dollars one way or another to bust the sanctions. And so the Russians are giving them those dollars. And then the soldiers, the same way the soldiers fighting in Ukraine, they're also paid. But again, they don't actually get the money. The dollars go to the regime, which can use it, again, for sanctions running.
So are these people volunteers or are they conscripted by the regime to go to Russia?
Right. Well, I mean, it's North Korea, so I'm not sure we can ever talk about volunteerism. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that there is some desire in North Korea to go and take these jobs in Russia, though, just because North Korea is a pretty grim place, right? I mean, everybody knows that, right? And North Koreans aren't traditionally allowed to travel, so the idea of being able to go to Russia, even if it's something pretty harsh, might be interesting just because it sort of relieves the sort of gray normality. The soldiers, it's a different story, right? By now, I presume that stories have begun to filter back from the front lines in Ukraine to people in the North Korean military. North Korean casualties have been very, very high. They really struggle to adapt to drone warfare. So I would imagine at this point, the soldiers are probably being dragooned.
All right. I want to play for you a piece from the BBC. It's about those workers who are sent to Russia. They're monitored and kept at their work sites constantly. They sleep not in even dormitories, but in shipping containers or unfinished apartment blocks. Anyway, this is what the BBC has to say.
This video, posted on social media by a Russian official in April, shows a North Korean man working on a construction site in Russia's Far East. He's one of thousands of North Koreans working to fill a huge labor shortage, exacerbated by the war in Ukraine. We've spoken to six workers who've managed to escape Russia since the start of the war, including this man who fled last year.
I was excited to go to Russia, to travel abroad and earn money. But once I started working, I felt like I was in a labor camp, a prison without bars. I was terrified when I woke up each morning. My hands would seize shut, paralyzed from the day before.
The workers get paid next to nothing. Most of their earnings get sent straight to the North Korean regime. After receiving no money for 2 years, this worker decided to escape.
We were treated like animals, not humans. The other workers used to say, we were just slaves for Kim Jong-un. They used to taunt us. You're not men, just machines that can speak.
It used to be common for them to work abroad like this, making money for Kim Jong-un. But in 2019, countries were banned from using North Korean labor, an attempt to starve Kim of the funds to build nuclear weapons.
So the business of getting money directly from Russia into the regime to help fund their nuclear program and much else, I suppose. The word, though, will get back, won't it, to people who are being sent there, and perhaps they'll be more reluctant to go. But what happens if you say no to Kim Jong-un?
I mean, North Korea maintains a pretty substantial gulag system with about 250,000 people in it, right? And the judicial system, of course, is just, you know, kangaroo courts. So I would imagine that, again, if you're sort of told by the government, by sort of local party officers or local police that you have to go, I presume there's not a whole lot of options. I mean, that's how North Korea is run. You know, Russia likes North Korean labor because of what you just heard, right? There are really basically no rules. You can kind of do whatever you want to them, which is the same way the Russians have treated Ukrainian, the North Korean soldiers in Ukraine. They're basically cannon fodder, right? And, you know, for North Korea, because it's sort of like a prison society, though, any kind of travel abroad is somewhat enticing. And you heard that in the report.
Yeah. Now, the question is, for those North Koreans who go, do some of them go with the idea, I can actually escape? I go to Russia and perhaps I can get across a border into somewhere more hospitable.
Yeah, there's probably some if it's sort of young males who don't have much at home for them. But I would presume that the regime sort of makes sure only that people who have sort of established family back in North Korea are allowed to go. The new regime does this with its diplomats to prevent them from defecting, right? Basically by threatening people's family. You know, if you run away, we're going to throw you away from the camp or something like that. You know, we'll kick your kids out of, you know, university and send them off to a gulag or a labor camp or something like that. And so I would presume that there are family threats hanging over almost all of these laborers.
Now, what about other quid pro quo? I mean, in terms of trade, what can North Korea supply to Russia? Drones, perhaps? And what does Russia supply to North Korea?
Right. So besides manpower, the big thing that the North Koreans have given the Russians has been munitions. The North Korean military, North Korea as a whole, really was basically designed around the Soviet Union in the late 40s and early 50s, right? It's basically sort of a Korean version of Stalinism. And of course, the Red Army was, you know, what the Russian army used to be. And so there's a lot of interoperability. They use the same kind of artillery, specifically same kind of munitions. And so there's been a lot of that, right? Like hundreds and hundreds of shipping containers worth of munitions, we think munitions, have been sort of tracked going into Russia. There's a question about how useful that stuff is, right? The dud rate, you know, we're hearing all these sort of rumors about the dud rate on North Korean ammunition. It's 20, 30, 40%. And then in exchange, the Russians, we think, and we don't know, we think that the Russians are giving the North Koreans help with missile technology. There are some specific technologies the North Koreans, we think, have not perfected and the Russians can help them with.
Now, we're always hearing about America and chips and whether or not chips should go to China. How advanced electronically, digitally is North Korea?
Right. So, again, we think, you know, we don't know. We've never had a scientist defect from the North Korean nuclear program, so we really don't know. We think that the North Koreans have sort of two or three big things they want from the Russians. The first is drone technology. You know, of course, the Russians have gotten really good at drones, of course, because that's where the entire war has tilted in the last, you know, 2 years or so. And then also for the missiles, specifically guidance and reentry technology, which is to say the North Koreans can launch a missile up into space, but we don't know, a ballistic missile, right? We don't know if they actually have the ability to guide it to a specific grid reference, right? I mean, if they shoot at the United States and it lands in, like, I don't know, the Hudson Bay, you know, it doesn't make any... So. That's one issue. And then the other is reentry, right? When a ballistic missile goes up, particularly if it's going very, very far, it actually goes into space for a brief stint before it reenters the atmosphere. You know, and as we've all seen in the movies, you know, and stuff like that, you know, Apollo 13 or whatever, right? You can burn up if you don't enter the atmosphere the correct direction and the whole bit. And the North Koreans, we think need help with that. And the Russians have that stuff, right? I mean, the Russians have had these kinds of missiles since the 60s.
Now, a final curiosity, that Kim Jong-un might want to make North Korea a tourist destination for Russians.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Russians have been cut off from a lot of world travel, right? I mean, the sanctions on Russia now are pretty stiff. And there is a Russian middle class, right? I mean, we all know these stories about, you know, sort of like Russian elites, you know, roaming around European cities and stashing their money in banks in London and buying real estate and stuff like that. So, I mean, there is a Russian middle class, and Putin has tried to avoid mobilizing them to sort of keep the full scale of the war away from his popular pillar of support. And so it's possible these people still want to go on vacation, want to go someplace and stuff. Western Europe is cut off. South Korea is now cut off. Japan and so on. You know, China is obviously tricky because China is increasingly sort of the dominant, you know, kind of increasingly Russia's patron. So perhaps North Korea is an option. I've actually been to North Korea myself. There's really not a whole lot to see or do there. I mean, you can go gambling. I mean, I've been to North Korean casinos, you know, but I mean, like, the stuff about, like, beach resorts and everything, I'm trying to imagine what a North Korean beach resort would be like. Perhaps, but I'm skeptical.
Yeah. There's a story going around that Kim Jong-un sent a delegation off to scout out how to do that kind of beach resort and fixed upon Benidorm in Spain as a model that might be replicated in North Korea.
Yeah, this is actually one of the weird things that Kim, this particular Kim, there have been three of them. This is something curious that this particular Kim has gotten into. This is not the first time that he's sort of talked about this. Like they've had, he's built like roller coasters and theme water parks and stuff in Pyongyang. You know, so it's possible. I mean, certainly his father and his grandfather never talked this way, right? I mean, there was like the most you had in North Korea before them was like a bowling alley or something, right? And, you know, now, of course, alcohol. But to attract tourists, you have to have something like fun and colorful and exciting, right? I mean, you know, beaches is like pretty girls and sports cars and stuff. And now you don't have any of that in North Korea, right? I mean, there are no, you don't go to bars on a Saturday night in North Korea. Again, maybe it's really changed since I've been there. I mean, it was 14 years ago. But, I mean, North Korea doesn't have the kind of freedom that we associate with tourist travel, right? Sort of like fun and, you know, you cut loose and get crazy. You don't cut loose and get crazy in North Korea because then you get in trouble. So, again, I'm pretty skeptical.
Robert E. Kelly, Professor of Political Science at the National University in Busan in South Korea. Thank you very much for joining us. Fascinating stuff.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.